Welcome to another edition of the Grilling Truths NFL Legends Show, brought to you by Gridiron Mo. Gridiron Mo is a new interactive football app where you get to call what you think the offense or defense should do during a live NFL game and see what all other fans have called also. So check out Gridiron Mo at www.gridironmo.com. As always, I'm your host for the Legends Show, Mike Goodpaster. Today I want to welcome in one of the top, I think, a guy that belongs in the Hall of Fame, former Pittsburgh Steeler, Andy Russell. How you doing tonight, Andy?
Oh, I'm doing good, Mike. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, even though I'm a Bengals fan. And, you know, it's tough for me to talk to Steelers sometimes, but
I understand.
But I'll tell you, from doing the background information, the thing that really caught my eye about you is I read that when you were 15 years old, your parents gave you $400 to challenge you to ride a bike from Scotland to Italy on your own. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
Yes, we were living in St. Louis, Missouri, and they came to me when I was 15 and said, we want you to go to Europe. I'd been over there because my father was born in Glasgow, Scotland, and I'd been over there before when I was 13. And they said, we want you to bicycle from Glasgow to Naples, Italy. And I was thinking, well, you know, I've ridden my bike around the neighborhood, but maybe a half a mile. I mean, I wasn't a bicyclist. And I said, you're kidding. They said, no. I said, by myself. And they said, yeah. I said, well, can I take a friend with me? And they said, yeah, if you can talk one of your friend's parents into this, yes, you can. Well, I did talk one of my parents, one of the parents of one of my friends, and he came with me. But I was the one looking at the maps and, you know, making sure we didn't get lost. And it was a great experience. And it took about 2.5 months, and you know, I came back a different person.
All right. Now, I read also you didn't start playing football until high school. Was there a reason you waited so long?
Well, back in those days, the 50s, you really didn't play until your freshman year, you know, ninth grade. So before that, they didn't have these leagues that they have now, you know, for younger kids.
Yeah, the Pop Warner, Pee Wee football, stuff like that.
Right.
Now, I know you had a great high school career. You chose to go to Missouri over probably 25-plus offers you had. I mean, what made you choose the University of Missouri?
Well, it was primarily because of Dan Devine. He was the coach there, and he was a very strong recruiter. He knew how to recruit. You know, he had the governor calling my dad, the mayor calling my dad, you know, which is all legal in those days.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of pressure being put on me to in St. Louis to become a Mizzou guy. You know, I wasn't going to go to an Ivy League school, that's for sure, because my grades weren't that good. But, you know, I went to Mizzou, and it was a good school, and I liked the experience. And Dan Devine was a great coach, and we won most of our games.
Now, Dan Devine, I think, is one of the most underrated coaches in basically history. I mean, Notre Dame fires him because he wins an average of 9 or 10 games a year. You want to talk a little bit about what kind of coach he was and what kind of an effect he had on you?
Yeah, he was a very, very good coach. I agree with that. And, you know, I had three professional coaches after that. And but Dan Devine was a classic, you know, successes in the details. And, he saw something in me that I had no clue about. He made me a linebacker my sophomore year. I'd never played linebacker in high school. I played safety. And I really wasn't I didn't love tackling people. I'd rather be the hit tour than the hit tee. But you know, it was a good experience, and he saw something in me. And I remember my freshman year, junior year at Missouri, I led the team in rushing and receiving and interceptions. But in those days you played two ways. And I came back my senior year hoping to improve those stats. And Dan Devine said, now, Andy, you get tired in the fourth quarter. I'm going to play you only at linebacker. Well, as it turned out in the NFL, that was a good move for me.
Now, when did your goal become to be an NFL player?
Well, yeah, it was really interesting because my father was the corporate president of Monsanto overseas, and my parents were living in Brussels, Belgium. They allowed me one phone call a month, no more than 2 minutes. But my father called me from Brussels, Belgium, and he said, "Son, I want you to promise me you'll never play pro football." And I said, wasn't thinking about it because I had ROTC, which meant I was going to, after I graduated, I'd have a commitment to spend 2 years active duty in Germany as an Army lieutenant. And so I said, "Well, Dad, just out of curiosity, why would you say that?" He said, "Because it would humiliate the Russell family to have a son play a game for a living. You got to be a worker." He's yelling at me from Brussels, Belgium. Anyway, so as it turned out, the military didn't require me to show up until January of 1964. I graduated in June of 63, so I did sign with the Steelers, and then was very fortunate because Buddy Parker was the coach, and he hated rookies. And I was lucky to even make the team, let alone start my rookie year, and that only happened because the two senior players ahead of me got hurt in the very first quarter of the first game. And so they also get in there. I was like, "I'm not sure I want to play this game." You know?
My dad told me not to. Let's see. So you had a great rookie season. What were some of the moments that stood out for you that year?
Well, you know, it was a learning issue that I wanted to, you know, because I saw as a linebacker in college that the more you understand what the offense is going to do, the easier it is and the better it is for you to make plays. And so I kept working on that, and I made the All-Pro rookie team, and you know, then the Steelers said, "Well, you can't go in the military." I said, "Well, you know, I have a contract with the United States government. I have to go." They said, "No, you can't. You know, we'll get you out of it." Well, they did get me out of it and put me in some kind of reserve unit in Pittsburgh. But I told them, "No, I'm going to Germany. I'll be back in 2 years, and I'll be ready to play." And,
so what was your time like in Germany on the two-year military commitment?
Well, it was a great experience. Pretty much a fiasco relative to the military. People ask me, was I a veteran? I kind of think that veterans were people that were in combat, and
yeah.
The most dangerous thing I did in Germany was to drive my Porsche on the Autobahn. But
I had my dad actually was over there. I think 64 through 66 served in the Air Force, and that's kind of the same thing he told me too about the Autobahn. So
yeah. They're driving 120 miles an hour, you know. And so anyway, it was a good experience because I ended up playing division level football. When you get 25,000 men to pick a football team out of it, it's not you know, it's pretty decent football. I would compare it to not major league not NFL, but not major league college football, but you know, second level. College football. Anyway, I played middle linebacker and was a coach of the defense, and that really helped because I put in all these Steeler blitzes and all this, and all of a sudden we won every game, and it was a good experience.
Now I know you when you came back, rejoined the Steelers. I know you finished getting your master's degree, started your own business. How difficult was that to juggle a new business with a football career?
Well, it turned out pretty easy, actually. I got my MBA back in Mizzou using two off seasons to pay for that, and then I started my own business in 1969 called Russell Investments, for lack of a better name, and I was syndicating deals for Wall Street syndications, and the first year. 1969, which was Chuck Knoll's first year, I made more money than the Steelers were paying me. And my wife, of course, said, "You know, why don't you retire? You could get hurt." I said, "No, I want to see if we can win half our games someday." Well, we did a little bit better than that, you know, winning two Super Bowls, and then, you know, it was a great experience.
Yeah, you ended up playing for Chuck Knoll. He became the Steelers coach, as you said, one of the greatest football coaches in NFL history. How did he change the culture of the Steelers? Plus, do you remember that first speech he gave to the team?
I sure do. He called me into his office in 69 when I was having this good off season raising this money, and I thought I was so naive. I went to his office thinking he's going to compliment me for making my first Pro Bowl in 1968, and he said sit down, Russell, and then he said, you know, I've been watching the game film since I took the job, and I don't like the way you play. You're too aggressive. You're too out of control. You're trying to make the big play. I said, well, Coach, we're losing every game. I mean, I'm trying to help. And he says, no, I'm going to make you a better player in your 30s than you were in your 20s. And so that was an interesting experience. Then the first team speech he gave was interesting because he gets up in front of us and he says that same thing. I've been watching the game film since I took the job, and I can tell you guys why you've been losing. Well, you could have heard a pin drop in this room because we had a lot of good guys who really cared. And we had meetings all the time. What's wrong with us? Do we have flawed psyches? Or, you know, why can't we win? Because most of us had been winning players in high school and college, you know. So he says, the reason you've been losing is you're not any good. And I'm going to have to get rid of most of you. Well, five of us made it from that room to the Super Bowl in 1974.
Well, and you get 3 years later, he gets you guys to the playoffs 72. You had the immaculate reception. You guys almost upset the undefeated Dolphins. Can you talk a little bit what it was like around Pittsburgh? Because it had been so long since they'd had a team that was like that. Yeah, they may have never had a team like that. But, I mean, can you talk a little bit about Pittsburgh and that season?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the Steelers fans, we call it we used to call it the Steeler Nation. Now they call it the Global Steeler Nation because there's Steeler bars in Hong Kong, Singapore, Bangkok, you know, all over the world, Rome, Frankfurt. It's just amazing. And I've been in most of those bars. But, you know, I started taking my business overseas because an ex-Steeler named Frank Atkinson, who was the number one draft choice my rookie year, out of Stanford. He had left football right away, even though he started his rookie year. And then he went, got his MBA, and then made all this money in private equity. And he had all these companies. And so he called me and he said, Andy, I want you to, we're moving to Brussels, Belgium, and I want you to come and visit. And I'd been there, and I thought, that's off my list. You know, I can't do it, Frank. But he kept bugging me. I finally decided to make it a business trip rather than, a traveling trip. So I went, and then he got me into Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. And, those folks had a lot of money. So I finally had a billionaire investor that bought everything I could create for a number of years, and I had an office in Zug, Switzerland, and you know was over there at least once a quarter, so it was quite an experience.
All right. So, did your parents ever warm up to the idea of you being a professional football player?
Oh yeah, my dad. He came to the Super Bowls and he came to the Pro Bowls and that kind of stuff, and he did enjoy it, and of course he appreciate that he wasn't being asked to send me money because I was both a football player that was doing okay, but also a businessman that was making more money than that.
Yeah. Now, after the 72 season, you get to 73, you guys get close again. I think you lost to the Raiders in the divisional playoff. But in 1974 comes, what was – getting after all those years of being with a team that was an also-ran, what was it like Super Sunday for you the first time against the Minnesota Vikings?
Well, it was, you know, just pretty amazing. I Ray Mansfield and I, we were the old-timers, both of us rookies in 63. Here we are in 74, 12 years later. Basically, you know, we probably – we're wondering if we could possibly win. doubting us, even though we'd beaten the Vikings in regular season play in Pittsburgh. And so that game was interesting because the coaches at Minnesota made a big mistake. They ran the ball at Joe Green, which was insane, and of course he killed him. And so they had no rushing, and we're having very much. We had a good, some really good pressure on the quarterback and coverage. We had everybody covered, so they struggled, and we won the game, and that was our first Super Bowl, and then we won the next year against Dallas.
Now, George Perlis was your defensive coordinator, wasn't he? Was he the defensive line coach?
He was the defensive line coach, and you know, good, a really good coach. And we had very complex defenses, and we had everybody covered, and it was interesting.
Yeah, and I think that 76 Steeler defense was the best defense I ever saw. I mean, I think you guys played, what, five or six games with Mike Kruzak at quarterback instead of Bradshaw. You shut out multiple teams. You beat the Bengals in a blizzard 7-3 to win the division. You want to talk about a little bit what it was like to play with those guys, the Mean Joe Greens, the L.C. Greenwoods?
Yeah, you know, it was astounding because not only did we have the one of the best front four, as you just described them, Joe Green being the huge player, but we had some pretty good linebackers. Ham and Lambert are both in the Hall of Fame, as they should be. And so the three of us have an NFL record of 24 Pro Bowls. I'm proud of that. They don't care about it. But, then the defensive backs, we had an excellent, you know, secondary with Mel Blount and Mike Wagner. I mean, I think Mike Wagner is one of the best safeties I ever saw. So J.T. Thomas and so we had a really good defensive secondary, and I think that defense. We lost to the Oakland Raiders because our offense had both Franco Harris and Rocky Blyer had 1,000-yard rushing that season, so they had an offense that controlled the ball, running the ball. Well, in that game against Oakland, Frenchie Fuqua, who was the third string or the third running back. Franco and Rocky all were hurt and they couldn't play, so we had a four-string fullback running that they just couldn't make it move, and so Oakland beat us.
Now I've interviewed guys like Gary Dunn, LaVon Kirkland, Leon Searcy, all guys that knew Art Rooney a little bit. So do you want to tell? He was one of the founding fathers of the NFL. Can you tell us what he brought to the Steelers that was so special that, I mean, it seems like every player that played under him loved him?
Well, yeah, I loved the Chief. And, in fact, I was the only Steeler allowed to negotiate my contract with him because, you know, I was the captain and he allowed that. But most of the guys had to work with an accountant that worked for the team. But the Chief would, you know, I remember that my first Pro Bowl, I didn't have an agent. I mean, I didn't use an agent. I wanted to learn how to negotiate things myself. So I had gone to my first Pro Bowl, and I had made the mistake of going out to dinner with all the other linebackers like Sam Huff and guys like that. And they started talking about how much money they were making, and they were making, you know, two times, three times, four times more than I was. You know, so they were. I was making $20,000, and they were making $60,000 or $80,000. So I went into the Chief, and I said, "Chief, do you think my first question was, do you think I deserve to go to the Pro Bowl?" He said, "Yeah, absolutely. You should have gone the year before." And I said, "Well, why then are these linebackers be earning this kind of money?" And I listed it exactly. I knew what I had memorized it, what they had. And he said, "Well, Andy, we can't be held responsible for the mistakes of these other owners if they're that stupid." I just started laughing. You know, I was like, "Oh my God!" And he did give me a nice bump, not a super bump, but you know, it was decent. And so I respected him.
All right, I would think one of your greatest achievements, don't want to speak for you, but had to be being named a captain for the Steelers for 10 years by the coaching staff. What did that mean to you?
Well, you know, it meant a lot to me to have Coach Knoll expect that I, you know, it wasn't like I was giving speeches in the huddle or anything like that, but, you know, there was apparently he just wanted me to show the work ethic and so forth that all my teammates also loved. So it's something I'm really proud of. That I mean, I think it's a Steeler record, captain for 10 years, but the Steelers have never told me.
And then we talked about the 1976 season. I mean, injuries probably kept you guys from possibly winning three in a row. I know the Raiders were a great team. What led to your decision to retire after the 76 season?
Well, I had said that I was going to come back one more year to see if we could win three in a row. And I stuck with that because the reason I chose, the Steelers offered me two more years. And Coach Knoll used to, when he would cut a player, he would tell him, it's time for you to seek your life's work. That was his speech if he was going to cut a player or fire him. But I never wanted to have Coach Knoll tell me that. So I told him. She said, Andy, I want you to play two more years. And I said, Coach, I'm going to seek my life's work. And he laughed and said, okay, you got me.
All right, go back a little bit. We talked about Steelers-Raiders. You want to talk a little bit about that rivalry, what it was like to play in it?
Yeah, it was an awesome rivalry. They were a very, very good team and good quarterbacks and Stabler and guys like that. And they had a terrific running game and huge offensive linemen, so they could deal quite well with our front four. So, yeah, they were a tough team to beat.
Now, also, the other thing I read that really impressed me was the charitable work you've done since you've retired. And you want to talk a little bit about that and tell everybody about what you've been doing?
Well, the Rooneys, the Steeler owners of the, were very good at getting us all the players getting us involved in giving back to our community. And so that sort of was a mantra that we had to, live with. And years ago, started raising money for various charitable efforts. And then over time, I've really become even more involved, being on the board of a number of these important charitable efforts, and like the Taste of the NFL and things like that. So I'm trying to, stop hunger in America and things like that.
All right. Now, the other thing I like was your I found an acronym that you put in one of your books, ANIMALS. Do you want to explain to people what that is and what that means?
Well, yeah. The A in it was when I give a speech sometimes, I probably won't even remember all these, but the A is attitude. It's so important to have a good attitude, and Coach Knoll would not put up with anybody who had a bad attitude. And then the N in ANIMALS is never quit, and that I always tell stories about various players on the Steeler team that were so tough that they would never quit. And then the I is integrity, and that's, of course, telling the truth. And the M is motivation. And Coach Knoll said, I'll never motivate you. If I have to motivate you, I will fire you.
Yeah.
Then the second A is accountability. You got to be accountable for everything you do and make sure you do the right things. And then the L is leadership. So I use that to help me remember what I'm going to say. And then I have little stories to tell about each one of those letters.
Yeah, and like I said, I believe you belong in the Hall of Fame. I think a lot of that reason has to be, and there's a lot of guys like this, because of the lack of recorded sacks during your NFL career. Plus, the amount of great players that played.
Go ahead. They didn't even. Yeah, back in the '60s, we blitzed a lot, and I had a lot of sacks, but they didn't keep sack stats back in those days. And then sacks in the middle of the 70s started to become a big deal. And then Coach Knoll didn't want us to blitz because he figured our front four was good enough to put the pressure on the quarterback. And then he wanted us to be playing, covering wideouts and halfbacks and so forth.
All right. Well, we're about out of time. I know you probably got to get back to work. But it was an honor to have you on the show today.
Oh, hey, Mike, I enjoyed it. So appreciate the good questions.
Well, that's probably debatable from people listening, but you never know. But I want to remind everybody to check out our shows next week. Also, go to the Grilling Crew Facebook page. You can find us on iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher. Next Monday night, we'll have former five-time boxing champion Vinny Pazienza. Next Wednesday, we'll have former Cincinnati Bengal defensive lineman Gary Burley. So also check out Gridiron Mo, our main sponsor. Also check out Steelers Life, RealBengalFans.com, SteelbergBox.com. So for Andy Russell, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Gary.
Okay, bye.